There is no explanation for my decision to enter the clergy that is both quick and honest. They tend to be one or the other. The quick answer, and it is a response I've given most often to especially avid or fundamental believers, of which there is no dearth even among Baptists in northern New England, is this, an anecdote I was told by one of my more erudite professors at seminary. When he was a young graduate being considered for a poor rural parish in West Virginia, he gave a sermon at the church there one Sunday morning. It was, even in his own opinion, more intellectual than inspired, more long-winded than wise. It wasn't very good. After the service, an old deacon, a coal miner who had somehow made it into his 70s without succumbing to any of the grotesque lung diseases that usually mark the end of a coal miner's life, approached him and asked with a voice rich in irony,
"Was you sent, or did you just went?"
My professor understood instantly what the deacon was suggesting. He, the young pastor, seemed to lack passion and conviction. He seemed merely to be going through the motions. And so, when people would ask me why I'd become a minister, and I could tell from the question that they wanted an answer singed with Pentecostal fires, I'd recount this story, always ending with a self-deprecating shrug and the remark, "All I can tell you is I believe I was sent." The honest answer is more complex. On some level, I was sent, or inspired, or called. But my calling, such as it was, wasn't a single booming invitation from above. Really, is it ever? Or even one palpable experience of the living Christ in the here and now. When I was 10 and 11, I had a fairly common boy's interest in the horrific and the frightening, in whatever it was that caused one's heart to beat a little faster. Chainsaw murderers, serial killers, and those nightmare ghouls who lurk under our beds. Nasty stuff, but pretty typical. And then, of course, there was the predictable array of werewolves, vampires, mummies, aliens, killer robots, psychotic cyborgs, and the assorted undead zombies and freaks that television shows and movies churned out for my entertainment and dreams, or to be precise, for my disturbing, sheet-gripping nightmares. My friends in Bronxville and I would savor monster movies whenever they arrived for the summer at the theater across the street from the railroad station, and alone or together we would follow their computer-generated mayhem on what are now quaint and primitive video games. My fascination with this sort of carnage and violence was neither unusual nor a sign of a potentially dangerous personality disorder. Given the always precarious state of my parents' marriage, I wouldn't describe my childhood as flawless or serene. Some years later, when I announced my decision to go to divinity school, my sister observed that I was moving from a bickerage to a vicarage. But neither was my childhood inordinately painful or scarring. I played Little League baseball in the spring and Pop Warner football in the fall. In the winter, I played ice hockey and skied. My father was head of personnel for a large investment bank and commuted with a great many of my friends' parents into Lower Manhattan, gathering like pigeons every morning at that train station by the movie theater. My mother was an editor at a travel magazine, but left the publication in her early 30s to stay home and raise my sister and me. My father was 10 years older than she was. Their marriage was certainly not exempt from the strangeness that marked the 1970s, but its strains had more to do with the idiosyncratic characters of my parents than with the nature of their friends. As far as I know, no one was swapping spouses at pool parties in July and August. And though I occasionally smelled marijuana, the drug of choice in that circle was clearly brown liquor. The adults encouraged one another to drink scotch the way they insisted their children drink milk. As a teenager, I listened to a lot of heavy metal and punk music, and I papered my bedroom walls with posters of athletes and rock stars. I had girlfriends, but in a pattern that would continue through college and into my adult life. I withdrew as soon as it became evident that the relationship was reaching what airline pilots call the V1 point, that point of decision. Either we lifted off and became a very serious couple, or we aborted the takeoff and went our separate ways. Invariably, I chose to slow the engines if my girlfriend showed no sign of decelerating first.